What is it?
Patrick, do you have a minute?
Yes, I do.
Well, it might not be exactly a minute.
No, I get that. It's an idiom. Look, I have a lot of work to do today, so I can't have this conversation on right-handed time. Let's move it along, please.
You know the thing with the lights in the sky?
The Perseid meteor shower. Yeah, I know what you're going to ask. Just because it was at its peak last night doesn't mean there won't be anything to see tonight.
Was that our question?
I don't know. We need to ask things methodically.
The left-handers make all those intuitive leaps. It's very hard to follow.
Look, in about 10 minutes, you're going to realize that was your question. The answer is this. There's still a chance to see the meteor shower in the days before and after the peak. And if by chance that wasn't your question, well, you can come back.
Okay.
Wait.
What?
Didn't we say that part of our question was, do we need to take regular showers, too?
No. Remember, we figured out that there's no connection. We eliminated that methodically.
Look, I'm busy. I just don't have time to plod through this stuff in a right-handed way. In the time we've been talking, I could have invented a new enzyme. Now, just get out. Get out.
I think you really hurt their feelings.
I know. I feel bad about that. But you know what it's like explaining things to righties. It takes forever.
Yes. But you remember our instructions from the Guardians of the Universe.
We must take care of the primitive right-handed ones and help them build a civilization.
That is our mission, even if they try our patience. Now you must go and talk to them.
What do you think they're talking about in there?
I have no idea. They're so weird.
What happens next?
Let's go through this carefully. I'm going to introduce a show about left-handers. And then there's going to be a host and some guests. And I'll make some other announcements. And then a different show will come on.
When this one is over.
Yes, exactly. And now he still runs with scissors, but only left-handed ones. Colin McEnroe.
Yes, it's so much fun to listen to the right-handers going through things in their very deliberative way, just to make sure, you know, that they understand it. So, yes, that's probably our only moment of legitimate or illegitimate left-handed supremacy on this show today, because, in fact, even though it's International Left-Handers Day, we're actually going to be looking at least some of the liabilities to being left-handed, even though, in fact, Patrick Scahill is left-handed, so is Betsy Kaplan, so is Tucker Ives, and so am I. So, although left-handers make up 12% of the population, we are disproportionately represented here on the staff of public radio, which is also significant because our first guest is going to tell us that left-handers make lower salaries. So no wonder we gravitated right to public radio. Anyway, handedness is something that only one side usually sees. You look at Jon Stewart and you see a great satirist. I see a left-handed guy in Wordplay, a documentary about crossword puzzle mavens. I watched both Jon Stewart and Bill Clinton effortlessly do the New York Times crossword puzzle left-handed. You probably didn't notice that. But since 1988, left-handers have mostly run this nation. It's George H.W. Bush, Clinton, and Obama, all left-handers. For 8 years, from 2000 to 2008, we gave it back to the right-handers. I think you remember what happened. But America will probably pass out of left-handed control in the 2016 election. Who knows what dextrose supremacists will do with that opportunity? I shudder to think. It is today International Left-Handers Day. So we thought we would celebrate it with some, for the most part, depressing science about us left-handers. But what can we do? It's the kind of thing left-handed people would do, probably. They would find things that would be upsetting to them. Joining us now is Joshua Goodman. He's an assistant professor of public policy at Harvard Kennedy School and the author of The Wages of Sinistrality, Handedness, Brain Structure, and Human Capital Accumulation. Already, you can tell this is not going to be good news. Josh Goodman, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you first of all, before we even get into your findings, you begin your paper with kind of an overview of left-handedness and of handedness. So just to review, what is handedness? What is left-handedness? I mean, what do we know scientifically about why I'm left-handed and somebody else isn't?
That's a great question. So I think what we know is that if you're left-handed, it means that the right hemisphere of your brain is for some reason the dominant one. The right hemisphere controls your left hand, and it's the one that your body trusts more, whereas in mine, I'm a righty, it's my left hemisphere my body trusts more and is dominant. So that's what we know, is that it really, in the end, is about what part of your brain is running the show.
But do we know why children become left-handed? Is it strictly congenital? Does it have something to do with environment?
So when I started this research, I assumed it was all about genetics, and there's a lot of evidence that a large part of it is genetic, but there's also some evidence that some number of lefties are lefties because they had some challenges in utero or when they were infants to their health. So low birth weight babies are a little bit more likely to be left-handed than high birth weight babies, for example. And so there is a large genetic component to this, but there is a bit that's environmental as well.
So if you're left-handed, you tend to grow up, one tends to grow up with this kind of mythology, you know, that involves Da Vinci and Einstein and all these people. And basically the sort of notion that, as the introduction suggested, that civilization is kind of rested on our narrow 12% shoulders, that we've provided incredible creativity and spark, despite the fact that ladles and scissors and all kinds of other things don't work very well for us. In fact, your research sort of points in the opposite direction, right? That a lot of the news about left-handed people is not particularly good. We can go right to the there's a lot that you have to say, but we can go right to the title of your paper, which is has to do with income. The income statistics are not particularly encouraging.
That's right. So the main finding of my paper, and I think this was really the new fact, is that I was very carefully documenting, and I didn't know I was going to find this going into this research, that lefties earn about 10% less than righties do on average, and that's true both in the United States and in the United Kingdom, where I was able to find data that had all this information. I did not necessarily expect this going into the research. I should preface all of this by saying that my wife is left-handed. Some of my best friends are left-handed. I really did not intend this to generate, you know, bad news. But you know, I'm a scientist, and so I had to go where the data was pointing.
Yeah, and you shouldn't feel like you bear this kind of moral burden. In fact, your wife and I are filing a brief seeking reparations. We feel as though the left-handed people are owed 10% over the entire course of American history.
So she's a fairly high-powered attorney, so that actually scares me a little bit.
Yeah, reparations. Just mention that when you get home. see what she says. So then the question would be, why? But maybe even before we get to the why as it relates to the income question, there is some data suggesting correlations between left-handedness and, for example, just straight-out cognitive impairment, right?
That's right. So when I saw that lefties earned less than righties, I tried to look earlier in the data, not when people are out working, but earlier in life, when they're kids. What do we know about them? Is there anything that we can see that would explain these differences? And there is this very consistent pattern across these different data sets that I used, that lefties score a little bit lower on math and reading exams and have a slightly higher rate of things like learning disabilities like dyslexia, for example, than do righties. And again, these differences are not big, but they're very clear and they're consistent across all of these data sets and across these multiple countries I used. So there is some indication that maybe because of the way our brains are differently wired, for lefties this causes a slight disadvantage when it comes to learning math, learning reading, et cetera.
Now, left-handers will tell you that it's not as though the disadvantage was inherent in the handedness. The disadvantage, once again, interfaces with society. So society doesn't know how to teach left-handers. It's uncomfortable. We sit at uncomfortable desks. I certainly am old enough to have grown up with teachers who had no particular strategy for teaching left-handed children how to do handwriting or anything like that. They just assumed we would do it pretty much the way right-handed people would do it, and nothing you could tell them about the fact that your hand is going to be, you know, going through the ink or whatever. I mean, it just didn't really register with them somehow. So there are all these, you know, grudges and burdens and crabby things that we carry around with us, and that would be probably our answer. Why are we doing worse on standardized tests or anything else? Because we've been taught by a dominant society that isn't even really interested in any problems that we're having. Are there ways to look at the data to see whether that might be the case, or whether there might be sort of a more nature-based overlay that just says, you know what, it's just your destiny?
That's a great question. So there are two facts in the data that make me a little bit skeptical about that explanation, although I'm certainly sympathetic to it. One is that in at least one of the data sets, they actually asked kids at a very young age, probably even before they were in school, I'm going to recite a list of numbers for you. Can you recite it backwards to me? And they made the list longer and longer and longer and tested each kid to see what's the longest list of numbers that they could remember and recite backwards. And lefties do a lot worse on that task than righties do. It has nothing to do with writing. It's just about memory and what you're hearing. And it was done at a very young age. So that's sort of one fact that makes me think this is not just about something that happens to you once you get to school. Here's another fact. In one of the data sets, I know whether your mother was also left-handed. And it turns out in that data set, if you're the lefty kid of a lefty mom, you look totally like righties do on average. No disadvantage at all, at least in terms of test scores like math and reading scores. If you're the lefty kid of a righty mom, that's where the disadvantage seems to show up. So that could be that mothers are important, parents are important for helping kids model maybe how to write, how to use tools when they're young. But there's another explanation here, which I am intrigued by, although I'm not positive it's right, which is if you're the lefty kid of a lefty mom, you probably are lefty because of genes. And maybe that's a totally fine form of left-handedness. If you're the lefty kid of a parent who of parents who aren't lefties, maybe you got it because you had some early childhood health issue. You were a low birth weight baby. You had some other challenges. And maybe that's responsible for some of the gaps we see, in which case this is really not about left-handedness per se. It's really about your health when you're young. So a couple of facts just to chew on.
Josh, I didn't really retain any of the auditory information you just gave me, but
well, that's typical.
Yeah, no, what can I do? So that would also raise an interesting question, and I know there are data sets about this, about what happens would be right-handed children of left-handed mothers, right? That's another group of people. What happens to them?
That's right. So actually, there is a little bit of evidence in the one data set I have that the right-handed kids of lefty moms also have some disadvantages. And unfortunately, the data set's not really large enough to do much more than to say that's an intriguing fact, and I don't know what to make of it.
All right. So, yeah, because one of the things you also want to know, I suppose, is, you know, whether it changes over time, too. I mean, you know, when you're preschool, basically, your mother probably is, in most cases, the biggest influence in your life, the person who's kind of shaping your behavior, you know, how you eat, what you do, how you draw, all this kind of stuff. And then you enter a system, you know, that's really, really different. So that might be interesting
that's
to
right.
know anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, since you are an assistant professor of public policy, I mean, does any of this point for you toward public policy? In other words, is this useful to know in terms of setting educational policy or anything else?
That's a great question. So I'm not sure there's an immediate policy implication here, other than if I were a parent or a teacher, I'd pay a little bit closer attention to my left-handed kids or students just to make sure that they were on whatever track and learning what they're supposed to be learning. So, you know, again, I have three young kids. If it turns out that they're left-handed, I'm not going to worry about them, but I'll pay a little bit of extra attention just to make sure they're doing okay. I think that the deeper thing that this research raises for me is the fact that there is this connection between the way our brains are wired from an early age and the way our economic outcomes work 30 years later. And I think we're just beginning to learn more about this. And so that's the piece of it that really interests me, the fact that these influences really early on can affect your trajectories all throughout your life.
Right. So, I mean, we've kind of, you know, we've alternated through history between sort of, you know, weird holistic thinking about left-handed people and then really kind of weird simplistic thinking about left-handed people. So as you point out in your paper, you know, earlier in history, they were considered sorcerers or witches or allies of the devil. Or, I mean, they're all this kind of really, you know, the imputation was huge about what it meant to be left-handed. It never meant anything
right.
good. Right.
All the words that mean left-handed come from terrible words in their native languages, right? You don't want to be a lefty if you know what the words mean.
So we went from that to, I think there was sort of an educational model, the one that I grew up in, as far as I could tell, just from observation, which was sort of the opposite, which was that it didn't mean anything to be left-handed. It just meant that you did everything that right-handed people do with the other hand. That was absolutely the only thing it meant. Nobody was really interested in any kind of underlying questions, either about your cognitive skills or psychological or emotional components to this, that you know, it was just sort of a question of, I don't know, I mean, yeah, if you whined about the scissors, maybe they'd find you some scissors that worked or something. But that was about it. So we went kind of through that period. It seems as though what's happening now is that we're now looking at this in a different kind of holistic way, right? We're saying, no, it isn't just sort of a manual issue, that there's like this whole web of underlying things that are potentially meaningful, some of them in terms of cognitive capacity, some of them psychological and emotional, right?
That's right. So I think that's a great way to think about one of the things I was trying to do in this research, is to say that being left-handed is not just about the fact that you use your left hand. That's because your brain is wired a little bit differently. And one of the few things that biologists know is that the way lefties' brains are wired, they actually do process language in their brains a little bit differently. So if I'm a righty, it turns out almost all of my language processing happens in only one hemisphere of my brain. I'm just using half my brain. With lefties, it turns out you see both parts of their, both hemispheres of their brain lighting up when they're given tasks that involve words. And it raises really interesting questions about, you know, what's going on in their brains. Are they processing language differently in a way that affects the way they learn? Is that why they have slightly higher rates of dyslexia, for example? Does it have any advantages? I mean, I should say, you know, my study says that lefties earn less money, but I can't say much about whether they are, in fact, more creative, which is one sort of legend about lefties. There's just not much in these data sets that measures creativity. So I'm perfectly willing to say maybe lefties are more creative, and maybe they do go tend to work in public radio, and that's why they have lower wages. So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions here, and my research is just trying to prompt some further work.
Right. I was going to ask you, like, when you go home every night, your wife must ask if you have found any good news at all. It doesn't sound like you have, really.
I haven't found any great news, other than to say that my wife is a fantastic and brilliant human being, and by the way, out earns me. So, you know, it's important to realize that all of my, every social science study is about averages, and there are always exceptions to the rule.
So. Right. And this episode will be going up on the web fairly soon. You can play it for your wife. So
just to confirm
that you said.
Don't worry. She will definitely, she'll go through it with a fine tooth comb.
That's right. She's probably streaming it already. So I should say that in this next segment we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the hemispheric issues. In at least one instance where this usually doesn't happen, I think, Josh, is that one thing that doesn't typically happen is that left-handed people kind of reverse hemispheres from what right-handed people do with tasks. Although there appears to be at least one area where they really do that, where they just sort of flip it over. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We do have one question coming in. It probably is not a question that Josh can answer, but it could be the next study that he does. So here's Tom in Harwinton. Hi, Tom.
Hi. For your guest, I'm curious. I'm a left-hander born of a right-handed mother. I was also born breech. I was wondering if any of this science had involved looking for a correlation between breech births and left-handedness.
So the question, I mean, a broader question, obviously there are some intrauterine questions here. So does the way you come out of the womb have any correlation with left-handedness?
So I'm amazed that I'm able to say this, but I can give you a good answer to that, which is in the British data sets that I was using, they did record whether a baby was born breech or had other complications during labor. And in fact, there is actually a relationship between that and handedness. So babies that had that kind of complication during labor are slightly more likely to be left-handed than babies that didn't. So in fact, you know, that could be an explanation for your guest.
All right. Well, listen, Joshua Goodman, thank you so much for talking to us today. I wish you did bring better news, but we left-handed people are not shoot the messenger types. So assistant professor of public policy at Harvard Kennedy School and author of The Wages of Sinistrality, Handedness, Brain Structure, and Human Capital Accumulation. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to examine yet another component of all this. We may bring you good news, but I mean, if you're left-handed, and then we may not.
South pod member of the female gender, tender bender of my splendor, look at you. You do everything backwards from the way that I do. You inside out, upside down, left-handed woman, you.
And the person you heard doing that break is Tucker Ives, one of the many left-handed people who serve you and who are honored to serve you at extremely low wages here on public radio. If you want to call in as we go along here, I can't guarantee you that our guests will know the answer to every question that you ask, but you can at least ask a question. And you can call us at 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266 as we're getting ready for this segment. Let me also say, tomorrow on The Nose, our weekly cultural roundtable, kind kind of a special episode. David Edelstein, America's greatest living film critic for New York Magazine, CBS Morning News, and Fresh Air, will be coming up from New York to join our panel. It's long been a goal of his to do this, so he's going to be with us tomorrow. So we're now going to switch gears, but not very much, but we're going to talk to Daniel Casasanto. He's an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Chicago. He's co-authored several papers relating to handedness, including Good and Bad in the Hands of Politicians, Spontaneous Gestures During Positive and Negative Speech, and Moderators of Candidate and Name Order Effects in Elections, an Experiment. But first of all, get him on the air here, which I have to do with my right hand, I'd like to point out. Joining us now, Daniel Casasanto. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, great to have you. So coming out of the last segment, I was talking to Josh Goodman about the fact that, you know, there aren't too many areas where you just kind of in left-handers see a reversal of the hemispheres. But one of the things you've written about and blogged about is that in the sphere of emotions, and I think particularly emotions having to do with approach versus avoidance, there does seem to be a hemispheric flip-flop that you don't see in other stuff. Tell us about that. It's sometimes called the sword and shield effect, right?
Yeah, so we started investigating the relationship between handedness and emotion in people's brains. One of the textbook findings, validated by hundreds of studies over the past several decades, is that different emotions live in different hemispheres of the brain. And if you check just about any textbook, it'll tell you that positive or approach-related emotions, things like happiness and pride, live primarily in the left hemisphere. On the basis of this this finding, what's accepted as scientific fact, neural therapies have developed. So clinicians are treating people for the most common mental disorders, things like major depressive disorder and anxiety disorders, by zapping their brains using electricity or magnetism. And the goal of this therapy is to move the balance of activity, of brain activity, into the hemisphere that is believed to subserve positive emotions. So if you check any textbook, that's going to be listed as the left hemisphere. Well, it turns out that over about four decades, all of these studies looking at the hemispheric arrangement of emotions have been done in right-handers. Nobody had any reason to suspect that handedness should matter, that lefties should be any different from righties. They're pretty much the same in most ways. But we started thinking about why emotions would be lateralized to one side of the brain or the other, and thinking that maybe emotions are really built upon motor actions. So think about if you are going to pick an apple from a tree, you're going to use both of your hands to grab the branch with one and pull the apple towards you with the other. Which hand, as a lefty, which hand are you going to use for which?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to pull the apple. I mean, I think people at home, people who are listening to the show, wherever, just imagine yourself doing this for a second. It's a really interesting exercise. Picture yourself doing that. So, yeah, I'm left-handed. I'm going to pull the apple with my left hand and push the branch with my right.
Exactly. So the pulling the apple towards you is an approach action. It's you're getting something that you want. Pushing the branch away is an avoidance action. You're pushing away something that you don't want. Now, the classic instantiation of this approach and avoidance action with the two hands comes from days of yore when people wielded swords and shields. Which hand do you use for your sword?
Yeah, you're going to use your dominant hand for your sword, right. Your non-dominant hand for your shield.
Right. It turns out that this is a very general pattern. It's not, even though most of us don't use swords and shields anymore, we use our hands in this way, that the dominant hand is for approach actions, like grabbing the apple, the non-dominant hand for avoidance actions. Well, it turns out that our brains, emotions in our brains are organized according to this pattern, and that over many years, people have observed that the left hemisphere is responsible for positive or approach-related emotions because that's the hemisphere that controls their sword hand, their dominant hand. Well, that was done all in righties. What do we predict if this is true, if this is the organizing principle underlying emotions in the brain? Where should positive emotions be in lefties' brains?
Well, we should say that, before we answer that question, that in most other stuff, the answer would be otherwise, right? In most other areas of brain activity, it's not necessarily the case that the hemispheres reverse.
That's exactly right. So the seminal finding in this field that we now know as cognitive neuroscience was by a language researcher, Paul Broca. and he encountered a patient who could only say ton, 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 ton. He couldn't say any of the other words. He was a French speaker originally. And upon autopsying this patient's brain, he found a big hole in the front part of the left hemisphere, an area now known as Broca's area. And he concluded that we speak with the left hemisphere. On parle avec l'hémisphère gauche. And he predicted that Ton was a righty. He predicted that lefties should show a complete reversal, maybe. It turned out that prediction was totally wrong. Lefties have language in the left hemisphere. Most lefties do, just like most righties. So lefties' brains aren't the mirror reverse of righties, except in the motor system, except where it comes to control of the dominant versus non-dominant hands.
Right. So this sort of goes back to what I was ending the conversation with Josh about. So we started, there was kind of a point at which we really started to look at left-handed people that way, that just, it really just is hand dominance and kind of that's about it. But now we look at some of this other stuff. First of all, we look at some of the outcomes that Josh is seeing in public health, and it's clear that there's some other things going on. And then you look at this emotional part of it, and it kind of moves in the other direction, right? With this emotional part of it, the things we like to do versus the things we don't like to do, the hemispheres do reverse, correct?
Right, for approach and avoidance actions. Now, this has some potentially serious public health outcomes as well. On the basis of this textbook model of emotion in the brain, where people have thought for a long time that the good stuff is in the left hemisphere, these neural therapies have developed where clinicians will use either electricity or magnetism to juice up the activity in the good hemisphere. Well, we know that left-handers are statistically more susceptible to major depressive disorder and other common mental disorders than righties are, just a little bit, but it's substantial. If we are zapping their brains according to the one-size-fits-all model of how emotion works, it's likely that we are zapping their brains backwards. If lefties have their positive or approach-related emotions in the right hemisphere and we give them the standard neural therapies, we might be making their depression worse.
Right. So if I feel like I need to get Josh back on the line. No wonder our income is down. No wonder we have all these negative outcomes. When people treat us for anxiety and depression, they actually treat us backwards. That's the story of our lives. So we do have a lot of calls coming in here. I'm not sure how many of them really sort of go right to the sweet spots of your expertise. I want to get a couple of them on the air, but maybe before we do that, just to sort of establish a couple of other things. So one of the things that you've done, as I think was suggested by the title of one of your papers, is in fact look at gesturing. You know, we've been through this period of time where our political leaders, our number one political leader, was more likely to be left-handed than right-handed, despite obviously the statistics would kind of go against that if we're 12% of the population or whatever number you accept. George H.W. Bush in 88, Clinton in 92. Then we took a little break. We know what happened there. And then we're back with Obama. So one of the interesting things to do, obviously, is to look at how these people gesticulate, look at how anybody gesticulates. What did you learn about all that?
Well, we were testing the hypothesis that people associate positive things with their dominant side of space and negative things with their non-dominant side. And we were able to support this hypothesis in a number of ways in the laboratory. We would, for example, give people questionnaires where they saw pairs of alien creatures. For each pair, one on the right, one on the left, they'd have to judge which of these looks smarter or more honest or more attractive. And on average, the righties chose the alien creature on the right. The lefties chose the alien creature on the left, attributing all of these more positive characteristics to the one on their dominant side. Same goes if you ask people to evaluate pairs of products. Which of these two products are you going to buy? Descriptions are next to each other on the right and left. Which of these two job candidates do you want to hire? On average, frighteningly enough, righties want to buy the product or hire the person they see described on the right of a page, lefties on the left of a page. So this gives one pause. We all think that, of course, we have whatever position we're in right now due to our merits, but some portion of what we're doing with our lives might depend on which side of the desk our resume landed on and the handedness of our boss.
And you can see this in one place that I think you can see this is in the long-term thinking. You won't be able to see it much longer, but in the long-term thinking of the newspaper industry, which has always run its so-called lead story in the upper right-hand corner of a newspaper. That's always
right.
been the thinking. So that obviously it sort of they've intuited the clinical data that you're talking about right now, right? They're thinking that's what people are going to look at first.
Exactly. That seems to be the case, that even though you start reading on the left, you're going to devote attention to the side of space that is the good side for the right-handed majority of readers. Exactly. So we wondered whether the newspaper is one possible example of this right is good for righties in the real world. We wanted to find another example where we could look on a case-by-case basis, and we realized that the gestures that politicians make were a kind of naturalistic testbed for this idea that one's dominant side is the good side. So it turns out that in the 2004 and 2008 U.S. presidential elections, history endowed us with a balanced sample of two righties and two lefties crossed with political party, two Republicans and two Democrats. So it was kind of like the American people wanted us to do this experiment.
Right. So just to help people out, Kerry and Bush in 2004 are right-handed, left-handers McCain and Obama in 2008.
Exactly. So we wanted to know how did they, when they gesture, people gesture with their hands all the time. They usually don't know that they're doing it, but they do. We wanted to know when these candidates were talking about positive things, things they felt good about, which hand did they use? When they were talking about negative things, which hand did they use for these spontaneous hand gestures? And the data turned out just the way our theory predicted, the righties, when they were talking about good stuff, would gesture more often with their right hand, when talking about bad stuff with their left hand. The lefties did exactly the opposite. Obama, when he was talking about positive stuff, would gesture most often with his left hand, his dominant hand. When he was talking about negative stuff, he'd throw in some right hand gestures. This is potentially interesting because if you want to know a candidate's attitude toward the topics that they're talking about, their hands provide a source of information about this. If Obama's using his right hand, watch out.
Right, exactly. All right, we do have a few calls coming in here. As I said before, there's all research about this tends to be kind of hyper-specific, so I don't think Daniel should necessarily be responsible for every question that you ask, but some of them might be interesting to ponder anyway. So here's Marion in Stanford. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Colin. I was calling because I've been a teacher of the deaf for about 25 years, and this is strictly observational on my part, but it seems as if each year we've had a higher percentage of left-handed students in our deaf population at the school as opposed to the percentage of lefties in the rest of the world. I wonder if there's some kind of scientific research that's been done about that.
Wow. I don't know if there is, but it sounds fascinating, particularly if you think about what Daniel Casasando was saying before about the Broca area of the brain and the relationship with language. I don't know. Do you know anything about that?
I am not aware of any research linking handedness to deafness, although it's possible that there's some I don't know about. One possibility is that, and this could also explain something that you mentioned earlier about the overrepresentation of lefties in the White House. Mm-hmm. One possibility is that lefties we're finding more and more lefties because the left-handedness is less stigmatized than it used to be. Of course, a generation or two ago, even in the U.S., left-handed children were corrected. Mm-hmm. They were made to switch hands, called forced dominance, and use their right hands as if they were righties. Now we realize that there shouldn't be a stigma attached to one-handedness or the other. Shouldn't be. And so parents are much more likely to let kids express their natural handedness.
Yeah, although, I mean, it didn't completely go away. In fact, I was just reminded that on social media today, the husband of one of our main contributors to this show, or frequent contributors to this show, was corrected. He's like Generation X or something. I mean, he's a relatively young guy. And we did get calls. I guess Sally didn't hang on, but she was corrected. We got, I think, also a tweet from somebody whose mother taped a crayons to her right hand as she was growing up around the house so that she would be forced to write with the right hand, or at least there would be a sort of a crayon taped to her right hand, which is a powerful hint. Do we know about what that forced correction did? I mean, it just seems like it would cognitively mess you up.
I'm not aware of any studies on cognitive deficits induced by forced correction. We know that there are tasks that forced dominance kids will revert to their natural dominance throughout their lifetimes. It seems to result in people who are toward the middle of the spectrum. Of course, we talk about handedness as a dichotomy, as either being a righty or a lefty, but most of us are somewhere in between where there's a continuum between being fully righty and fully lefty.
Right. And that actually may explain some of the calls we're getting here about ambidextrousness, too. We've got Peggy in Trumbull. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
Good. Question to you. I am basically right-handed, but if I pick up a pencil and write with my left hand, I write backwards without thinking about it. I mean, it just comes out backwards. And I write at the same time with both hands, one going forward, one going backwards. And I find that I use both hands without thinking about it. If I pick up something with my left hand, I can use it perfectly fine. I can also use my right hand. So I think I'm ambidextrous, I guess, to say the least. But the writing backwards is confusing. How can I do that? I don't understand it.
All right. The first thing I'm going to tell you is there's going to be a white van pulling up outside your house. Just get in the van, all right? We're going to take you. We're going to study you for about a year.
Okay.
And then you can come back. But, you know, I mean, you'll be housed and fed comfortably and stuff like that. Daniel, I don't expect you to have an easy answer to that one. Although, I mean, but we've gotten a bunch of calls from people who are ambidextrous. And I assume that kind of fits into the continuum theory.
Well, that's a special kind of ambidextrous. If you were able to do mirror writing, so you write with your non-dominant hand backwards, meaning it's like you're reading the writing in a mirror.
Let me see if I can get her back. She may have. Oh no, she's left us. Okay.
She's afraid of that white van.
Right, exactly. I may have scared her.
So if that's true, so there are a number of people who are ambidextrous in the usual sense, where they tend to use one hand, but they can switch to the other hand, even for skilled tasks like writing. What I think the caller was suggesting was that she is a mirror writer. And this is well documented, but also very rare, where people, without ever practicing, without ever meaning to, are able to write backwards, write as if the letters are being read in a mirror, usually with their non-dominant hand. This is somewhat of a mystery. It tells us something about the connectedness of the motor systems in the two hemispheres. That it's an overgeneralization to say that the left hemisphere controls the right hand, period. Obviously, the other hemisphere is getting involved in planning these letters, but it's planning them in these cases backwards.
All right, run for your life, Peggy. There are people who would probably want to find out a little bit more about this. Hey, Daniel, before we go, I should say that in our final segment here, we're going to talk to a left-handed pitcher because although we've given you some pretty bad news about left-handed pitchers, left-handed people, rather, on this show, it's often good to be a left-handed pitcher. There are certain things in sports in general. Tennis also, there are some real advantages, and even in bowling. But anyway, we're going to talk about the life of a lefty on the pitcher's mound. We're going to talk to a pitcher for the Bridgeport Bluefish. Before we go, though, just really quickly, one of the other things that you looked at, and we mentioned this at the top, is the issue of candidate name order in elections. So one thing that's been clear from what you said is that if a ballot was horizontal with one candidate on the left and one candidate on the right, you'd probably statistically really want to be that candidate on the right. That's what people would choose. Is there anything else that you've learned about ballots and how things work out because of stuff like this?
Yeah. So for many years, people have known there are ballot order, ballot design effects where you get a boost in votes if you're at the top of the ballot. And to correct this inequity, some ballot designers suggested, well, why don't we array candidates' names horizontally? There'll be no biases then. Well, we didn't know about these horizontal biases until just a few years ago. We did a large random dial survey. I believe it was about 1.3 million Americans were invited to participate. A few hundred did. and they were asked to read about some candidates and decide who they would vote for and answer on a simulated ballot where we manipulated whether the candidates' names were on the left or the right. Now, this isn't so unrealistic. The dreaded butterfly ballot from the Gore election and many others list candidates on the left and right of each other. We found that lefties were about 15% more likely to vote for the candidate whose name they saw on the left of a ballot. Now, that's a simulated election, but if the real difference were anything close to that, this could decide the fate of the free world, right? This is enough to really move the needle.
Right. No, we know how – we've seen elections like that. Well, Daniel Casasanto, thank you so much for joining us. Assistant professor in psychology at the University of Chicago and the author of several papers involving handedness. All right. When we take a break, we'll come back, and as promised, you'll meet a left-handed pitcher.
I ain't talking out of fear or spite. Left-handed people just ain't right. Watch out for those left-handed people. They just ain't right.
I'm starting to feel bad for left-handed people. Can't we just go back to the good old days when they were witches and sorcerers and we could just hang them? Today's show was produced by Deborah Timms, Lydia Brown, and me, Kion Wolf. Our intern today is Katie McAuliffe. Greg Hill tweets for us at WNPR Colin and appeared in the intro along with Patrick Scahill and Betsy Kaplan. The part of Bill Curry was played by Bill Clinton. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff trying to figure out a left-handed ladle, visit our website WNPR.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, the nose grapples with the last taboo body function. And now, back to Colin.
It's so taboo, I won't even tell you what it is. All right, so we wanted to save the final segment for the left-handed pitcher. The left-handed pitcher occupies a really special place in sports. I mean, it really is the place where left-handedness is often singled out as a virtue or an advantage. Joining us right now is Matt Iannazzo. He's a left-handed pitcher playing his second season with the Bridgeport Bluefish. Welcome to the show, Matt.
How you doing, Colin?
I'm doing great. As a fellow left-hander, I'm proud to talk to you. I grew up as a Red Sox fan, so of course I've got the whole Bill Lee stereotype about left-handed pitchers in my head. But let's just begin with your own life. Even before you started pitching, what did it mean to be left-handed? Was that an okay way for you to grow up, or did it seem at times like a disadvantage?
Probably never seemed like a disadvantage besides when I was trying to cut something in elementary school with the scissors. But, you know, other than that, being left-handed, it really just seemed like something that people were amused with. Nothing more than that as far as a disadvantage is concerned.
All right. But now in baseball, it becomes really important. You want to have lefties on your staff. And for people who don't follow baseball that closely, this might be a thing that's worth quickly explaining. If I've got a left-handed hitter coming to the plate and I'm the manager, I may want to bring you in as a left-handed pitcher. If the left-handed hitter sees you up there on the mound, he might, if he's a switch hitter, he might want to turn around and bat right-handed. Now, why is that? Help people understand why you as a lefty pitcher on a lefty hitter have an advantage.
So there's so many right-handed pitchers that play baseball, and there are so many left-handed hitters that happen to have power. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, kind of hitting the ball over the fence and doubles and triples and such, that bringing somebody in that can make those left-handed power hitters feel uncomfortable is an advantage. And the left-handed pitcher, they typically throw the ball from either their release point is either right at the lefty or behind the left-handed hitter. And the ball has to come on over the plate. So, you know, it just makes them feel a little bit uncomfortable. And the stats show that left-handed hitters hit left-handed pitching not as well. So, you know, it's kind of blossomed from there, and it's given a lot of guys careers.
So yeah, sometimes there's talk about the left-hander, lefty on lefty, or righty on righty for that matter, the ball will supposedly freeze the batter, right? Or buckle his knees. That's another thing
right.
That you hear. And that, I assume that means, in other words, the batter sees the ball, it appears to be coming at him. It's going to break across the plate, but it looks like it's coming right at him. That's the phenomenon you're talking about?
Right. That's the exact phenomenon. You know, it's usually a breaking ball or a curveball or a slider that's starting right at the hitter. And it can happen to right-handed pitching and right-handed hitters also, but it seems to be more prevalent late in the game with a left-handed hitter and a left-handed pitcher just because there are usually between two and three left-handed pitchers on a team and probably about 10 right-handed pitchers. So, you know, it's just a little bit more uncommon. Therefore, it's a little different.
So you said it's given a lot of guys careers. What you mean there is because there's really kind of a need for this and a need for a team during a long game where they're using multiple pitchers to maybe alternate handedness in the pitcher, maybe over the course of a homestand alternate handedness in the starting pitchers, screw up the lineup of the other team. There's a market for left-handers that's disproportionate to where they are in the population. Only 12% of the population, but you want more than 12% of the pitchers in professional baseball to be left-handed. So it really is. I mean, you're inherently more interesting to a general manager or a manager as a left-hander than you would be as a right-hander, correct?
Right. There's a niche, especially at the higher levels of baseball. There's a niche for a left-handed pitcher that's really good at getting left-handed hitters out. And that's what I meant by kind of giving a lot of guys careers, because they might not be as good of a pitcher, meaning they don't throw as hard or their stuff isn't as good, but they're really, really good at one thing, and that's getting left-handed hitters out. And there's a job for people like that, you know, at the highest level of baseball. Now, as far as, you know, having different handedness in the starting rotation, opposing managers tend to change their lineups depending on if a left-handed starter is starting or right-handed starter is starting. So typically you like to have at least, you know, one or two in there to kind of change it up. So maybe they don't have their best lineup on the field every single day.
Hey, tell us about your first baseball glove, the green Ninja Turtles glove.
Yeah, so I was a kid, and that's the perfect, you know, story for the left-handers day. My mom and dad, we were going to play t-ball, and mom and dad went out and looking for a left-handed glove. And this was probably 1995, 96, and they couldn't find anything. So they happened to walk into a Dick's Sporting Goods, and there was a Sports Authority, and there was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles left-handed glove, and that was the only one they had, so they scooped it up. I think I used that thing for 2 or 3 years, and then I moved on to a real one, but it was something that my parents still talk about to this day.
The ignominy, the green Ninja Turtles glove, but you bore it well. So, growing up, or as you became more and more serious about pitching, was there a left-handed pitcher that was sort of your model or your hero or the one that you really sort of looked up to?
Oh, for sure. I mean, as the years have gone on and as I've developed as a pitcher, you know, as I'm watching baseball on TV, there's every single time if there's a left-handed pitcher pitching, you better believe I'm sitting there watching and seeing what they're doing to get guys out and trying to be, you know, similar to them, because, you know, that's at the highest level. But, you know, locally, you know, there's a guy like Craig Breslow, from Trumbull.
Right.
And, you know, he's been in the major leagues, left-handed pitcher, and he's been doing great.
Also very well-educated, very well-educated young pitcher, too.
Oh, yeah. I believe he went to Yale, I think, right?
Yes.
Somewhere around there.
Someplace like that.
You know, I actually have the pleasure of talking to him a few times and kind of picking his brain. And, yeah, really, really bright guy. And more specifically, kind of with the Yankees, I'm a Yankees fan growing up, and Andy Pettit, Andrew Miller, you know, guys like that have really influenced me.
Hey, Matt, we only got time for one more question, only about a minute left. But what do you make of Pat Venditti? This is this guy, there's been never anything like him, really.
Right.
He throws hard with both hands. They had to invent a rule for him because in the middle of a game, he'll change gloves, he'll change to a different glove, and he'll change hands. I mean, does this blow your mind as much as it does the typical fans?
Oh, yeah, it's got to. I mean, being really good and getting – hitters are so good at the higher levels that – getting them out with one hand is really hard, let alone having the ability and the wherewithal to get them out with both your hands. And, you know, as long as baseball continues to be a way to profit and make a lot of money as you can, there's going to be people that are going to continue to bend the rules and do everything that they can. And, you know, good for him that he has that special ability. And that's something that we might have one guy every 20, 30 years that can do that at the level that he can. I wish him all the success in the world, because I think that's awesome.
Okay. Hey, actually, we've got about 20 seconds left. So left-handed pitchers are – finish that sentence.
Man, we're goofy. I'll tell you what. We are goofy. You know, we're always the jokesters. For whatever reason, it just seems like The guys that make people laugh on the team are always the left-handed pitchers.
Matt, I'm so glad you said that. Matt Iannazzo, he's a pitcher for the Bluefish, Bridgeport Bluefish, Mary Jane Foster's team. This is two Bluefish interviews in 1 week. Who would have thought it? Thanks so much to Lydia Brown and Deborah Timms for producing this show.
I'll take each day at a time, just another hill to climb for a left-handed dreamer like me. For a left-handed dreamer like me.
I don't care what they say on the show. Lefties are weird and disgusting. Have you seen them eat?
I know. They use the hand we wipe with.
Wait, which hand do you wipe with?